No one is meant to be living here in a concrete sea. Everyone, including me, wishes he could be set free.
Hi, Terry Jacks, and you're listening to Radio Eco Shock.
And then I looked into the ocean blue, 'cause it's so deep and it's so quiet too.
Welcome to Radio EcoShock, your all-environment outpost here on CFRO Co-op Radio 102.7 in Vancouver. We've got a wild mix for you today. I like to start off, especially in this season, with a little bit of doom. We've got our map of doom talking about James Lovelock's predictions for what will happen if the climate goes to 5 degrees, if we go on with business as usual and keep on burning coal and driving our cars around. But we do have some solutions as well on how to get out of that mess. We're going to follow that up with Greenpeace worker and campaigner Richard Brooks, who's been fighting to save Canada's boreal forest, this giant stretch of forest right across the country, which is now being chewed up to be used for Kleenex tissues and Christmas wrapping. Then we turn to the music world with a longtime environmentalist, Terry Jacks, from Vancouver and now further up the coast. He's the famous author of things like Seasons in the Sun. We're going to be concentrating on his song Concrete Sea. And we'll also delve into the issues of how you can go on knowing about what's going on with the environment without getting so angry that it wrecks your life. How do you keep a sense of humor? How do you go on loving life and keep on living? So that's all on Radio EcoShock on CFRO Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. Coming up, you know, the worst.
In Washington, it was 24 degrees.
The nation's capital saw the mercury hit a record high of 74 degrees. Enough to need a fan.
The week before Christmas has some suggesting it's another scary sign of global warming.
Normally snow-covered, the Italian Alps are barren.
An oak tree confused. Some leaves dead because it's autumn, but others green because it feels like spring. This was London today, and plants are reacting to the strangely warm weather.
Normally, this is the sound of summer. Well, here we are in mid-December, and here at Kew Gardens, they're having to cut the grass. It isn't just that the autumn is unusually warm, it's also that the pattern of the season is changing.
South Australia is throwing all its firefighting resources at the blaze, but to no avail. In the region's worst drought for a century, temperatures have soared to 44 degrees Celsius, and strong winds are fanning the fires which continue to burn out of control.
What is the climate like in your hometown? Last week, the Radio EcoShock internet station went down for 2 days while we shivered in the dark with no electricity, along with a 250,000 other Vancouver area residents. Trees more than 300 years old were knocked down. Whole parks, famous parks, were flattened. But the local newspaper managed to find one climate expert who says, well, that's just weather. Nothing to do with climate change. Just move along, folks.
Nothing unusual at the moment.
A typhoon-strength storm swept across the entire northwest of the United States as well, causing deaths, massive power outages, and plenty of property damage. Meanwhile, the American East Coast was basking in summer weather. 76 degrees in the American capital, people playing tennis and shorts in New York City. Still, the major news networks managed to find spokespeople to deny any connection to global warming.
No climate scientist would ever say this particular week that we are wearing t-shirts in December is linked to global warming.
In Europe, the Alps don't have any snow on the famous ski hills. They are offering hiking tours instead. Roses are blooming in England. The oak trees have sprouted new leaves right alongside the yellow leaves of fall. In Moscow, the grizzly bear in the zoo won't go into hibernation. It's too hot. Here is my opinion. You can line up every scientist ExxonMobil ever paid in a grand chorus of denial, but most people know darn well we've screwed up the climate. Scientists have predicted more severe storms and warmer winters as key signs of climate change. Why is everyone afraid to come out and say it? Sure. Every year we'll have some different weather. We didn't have a big hurricane season in North America this year, as some had predicted. That doesn't mean that the 10-year picture for hurricanes isn't awful, with some more strong monsters like Rita, Wilma, and Katrina on their way due to heating of the ocean from climate change. Yes, we have seen Green Christmas before, but the Canadian Weather Service says the likelihood of having a White Christmas for places like Toronto have dropped from about 80% in the 1970s to 30% now. Scientists expected a gradual transition toward warmer winters, but the last few years show that climate change is developing much more rapidly than anyone thought possible, mainly due to positive feedback loops left out of earlier models. The natural systems are less stable than we thought. Predictably, lots of people tired of winter, shoveling snow and shivering inside of heavy clothing, secretly love the new weather.
I'll take warm weather over a blizzard that stops the whole city.
There are lots of blogs showing up saying, I love global warming. You can already order that on a button. No doubt this will become a chic movement.
I'm all for global warming at this point.
We call ourselves the New Yorkers who want to aid the rapid rise of global warming. Think of all the benefits for you when you support the manufacture of that precious CO2.
A cheerleader for climate change has already been appointed. Myron Ebell wrote an op-ed published in Forbes magazine, December 8, 2006, titled, What's Wrong with Mild Winters Anyway? Lots of people die in winter storms, he says, and anyway, people are moving to the southern United States because they like the heat. Myron Ebell is director of energy and global warming policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. It's only coincident that this institute received $1,380,000 from oil giant ExxonMobil, the largest single donation of any pro-energy, anti-environment group that Exxon funds.
Toast the earth with ExxonMobil, just ignore that burning smell. Sweltering is second nature when the world gets hot as hell.
We should ask the thousands of displaced people from New Orleans if they're bullish on climate change, or the hundreds of millions of people who will be flooded out, starved, or just plain killed by heat in tropical countries. Not to mention the species that will die, like the polar bears, because they can't adapt to rapid climate change. My friends, we're in the early days of an epic struggle to survive the disaster of fossil fuels. The war against the climate and the natural world has already been declared. But like in Europe of 1939, the major invasions haven't started. The politicians haven't started either. No real action to save the climate, and we're all shopping like there's no tomorrow. We're in the phony war stage. Here's a little friendly advice from the storm zone. Find a home that can withstand high heat and wind. Is your house or condo already too hot in the summer? If you don't have air conditioning, time to think of relocating because the power to run air conditioning might not be there, and you may experience 50 degree heat. Basements are good. Think low-energy swamp coolers hitched up to solar panels. Or, as Gaia scientist James Lovelock suggests, if you are young, consider moving north now. Within the lifetime of children, the American South may become uninhabitable due to high heat, water shortages, and storms stronger than anything yet seen. In her November 28th speech to the Institution of Chemical Engineers, Lovelock again suggested the polar regions may be the only place left habitable for humans by the year 2100 due to runaway climate change. One of his slides is the most frightening map I have ever seen. All of Africa, all of South America except for the southernmost tip, most of Asia, including India and China, Australia, and all of Southern Europe are shown as desert-like, uninhabitable regions. Humans and most life forms would be forced to northern Canada, Scandinavia, and northern Russia. Even most of the ocean would become a severely reduced life form area, basically deserts, due to overheating. Most of us picture tropical waters as rich with life, like the coral reefs we see in films. In fact, these reefs and a few underwater mountaintops are the exception. The really rich ocean life zones are in the cooler waters further north and south. The oceans soak up our excess carbon and our excess heat. And as they do so, they will begin to die off in the middle, while those species that can adapt will move further and further south or north. This is already happening. The coral reefs are dying. The tropical species are being caught in northern fishing nets for the first time. You can see this map of doom at www.icheme.org. That's www.icheme.org. Look for their December 1st press release on Lovelock, and then click on Figure 3. Or for your convenience, I've posted a version of what the world will look like if the global temperature goes up just 5 degrees at www.ecoshock.org/lovelockmap. ecoshock.rtf. That's lovelockmap.rtf at ecoshock.org. If humans are unable to stop building coal plants and driving polluting cars, that is, if we continue with the fossil fuel economy, you will need to get out a map book and learn the names of towns in the upper latitudes. If you are in your 20s or younger, you may spend your last years in northern Canada, Europe, or Russia. Meanwhile, we all need to do what we can. Personally, I developed my own climate plan a couple of years ago. First of all, I used to go to Mexico for a month or two every winter. It was great. Then I calculated that each trip added 1 ton of carbon to the atmosphere. I pictured a large bundle of carbon, nice and black, lasting at least 100 years, up there with my name on it. And I didn't like what I saw. So winter trips to the south are out for me. Next, I learned to use public transit. Sure, I have a car, but again, I'm killing the planet with it. My target was to use public transit for 90% of my trips, and so far, it's been no inconvenience at all. In fact, it has improved my mental health because I avoid all that anger and fear that driving on congested, dangerous roads added to my life. Looking in the longer term, I knew that our current parade of waste and energy gluttony cannot go on. I need a place with energy self-sufficiency in a community close to local food production. My wife and I have purchased a property in a fruit and grain-growing region that will remain habitable for our lifetimes. We are plotting our escape and planning our energy self-sufficient house. Of course, it will have to withstand terrible windstorms and fires. As the place heats up and dries out, fires will be a fact of life for city dwellers and country folk alike. Many parts of North America have already experienced dangerous fires. Just last month, Los Angeles was threatened by several brush fires. And as you know, the southern part of Australia and Tasmania are in flames now. Record-breaking fires are turning long-standing trees and brush into carbon. Borneo was also burning this year, swamping Malaysia with smog. The Congo rainforest is burning. The Amazon is still burning. Forests of the Rocky Mountains still suffer record fires. Even parks and well-known cities are not immune to fires as global warming develops. James Lovelock predicts that billions of humans will die due to climate change. The food system will break down as the ecosystem breaks down. And the oil-fueled agribusiness will become unsustainable as energy runs out, plus government pressure or bans on fossil fuel products. Most of us will adapt in this generation and migrate in the next. But I fear for all the animals and plants who won't make it. Many are already weakening and disappearing. The rich bounty of life has been irreparably damaged. Now we must act together to save what we can, including ourselves, from the tarry magic treasure we found under the earth and burned into the sky. That's my wish for the new year. You and I will meet in public places, change, and demand action from ourselves and from our leaders. Eastern Europeans escaped the trap of communism by simply showing up, night after night, by the millions, in public squares. Our urgent demand for action needs to be seen. What is more important, saving the climate or watching your favorite television show? Will we sail into disaster on our couches? We can stop that 5-degree change from happening. One of the best plans comes from the British journalist George Monbiot, that's spelled M-O-N-B-I-O-T. I urge you to listen to his speeches posted on the EcoShock website. It's free. No one will try to sell you anything. Just download or listen to Monbiot's speech in London or Vancouver. He has a plan that can work with the technology we have now. Find that and more solutions and science at www.ecoshock.org. Let's turn this death ship around before it sails over the edge of the world. That's it from Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock. You're listening to Co-op Radio on CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver. You know, the folks over in Kitsilano just had a global warming party a couple of weeks ago, had a Saturday in the park and had a get-together thinking about what they're going to be doing next. And one of the things that they're planning is to have these parties across the country. I have talked to Dr. David Suzuki during the holidays, and he's told me that their organization, the Suzuki Foundation, is planning a new venture during the spring to wake up the country, to move towards the new challenge of climate change. You can download the George Monbiot speech, throw that on a CD, hold a Monbiot party, and get your friends going. Even though it's rainy, they can be talking about it. There is a World Climate Day when people get together and hold marches. I think it's on November the 4th every year. Not the greatest time to hold such a day. You get more people out if you would do it in May, I think. How about May the 4th? But I think we're going to have to do this every month, if not every night. But how about every month we set a date and people get together and they keep talking until we get some action here and work out what they can do personally and how we can get some political pressure to change climate. After this bit of music, we'll be talking with Richard Brook of Greenpeace about the Boreal campaign.
Oh, the wheel of the year goes round and round. The wheel of the year goes round. Turns top to the bottom and the bottom to the top. And the wheel of the year goes round and round. Oh, the seed does die and the grass does spring. At harvest time it is reaped and mown. Then the seed does die and the grass does spring. And the wheel of the year goes round and round. Oh, the wheel of the year goes round and round. The wheel of the year goes round. Turns top to the bottom and the bottom to the top. And the wheel of the year goes round and round. At Lammas time the shade we bless, at Imbolc dark the fires we fan. Then the sun goes down and the moon comes up. All things work together in the weaver's plan. And the wheel of the year goes round and round. The wheel of the year goes round. Turns top to the bottom and the bottom to the top. And the wheel of the year goes round and round. Oh, dark is light and light is dark. I'll tell you a riddle if you bend to me an ear. Oh, death and life are but one thing, like sides of a penny or the circle of the year. And the wheel of the year goes round and round. The wheel of the year goes round. Turns top to the bottom and the bottom to the top. And the wheel of the year goes round and round. Our thanks to yonder good gray knight, who bends his neck to the cunning of the scythe. For all that liveth feed on death. All things that die have served the cause of life. And the wheel of the year goes round and round. The wheel of the year goes round. Turns top to the bottom and the bottom to the top. And the wheel of the year goes round and round.
The Wheel of the Year by Shira Kamen from the album The Almanac.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
Join us every Friday at 1 o'clock on CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver. So I'm speaking with Richard Brooks of Greenpeace, who's been slaving away for ridiculously low wages, trying to save some of Canada's last great forests. Can you tell us about your campaign, Richard?
Well, we have a number of campaigns at Greenpeace that are seeking to protect ancient forests in Canada. One of the ones that we've launched a couple of years ago that is, at full steam ahead is the Boreal Forest campaign. And for those listeners who don't know, the Boreal Forest is the largest ancient forest left in North America. It's that great northern forest that Canadians think of when they think about the Canadian wilderness. It's a forest that stretches across the country from all the way from Alaska over the northern portion of the country all the way out to the east coast. And we've been seeking a sustainable and ecologically sound and socially sound solution to the destruction that's going on in the boreal forest. Most of the logging that takes place in the boreal forest is clear-cut logging. And some of the clear-cuts that we've been seeing are upwards of 10,000 hectares in size, which is about 17,000 football fields stretched end-to-end. So these massive clear-cuts that are having a very large impact on wildlife, on water quality, on the First Nations communities that are based in these forest areas. So we're seeking a good solution to the destruction that's going on there right now.
And does it take longer for these tree areas to recover, even if they are replanted?
It does. It does. Many of the areas that get clear-cut don't recover. We have to understand that this is a forest that's been evolving for over 10,000 years and has been relatively undisturbed during that time. And so this forest is not one that is commonly subject to clear-cutting. So the impacts are quite large. What we're seeing in this forest is that many of the species that are there before a logging operation comes in don't show up after the logging operation moves out and there's a reforestation project. So the boreal forest is predominantly a black spruce, jack pine forest, and after a clear-cutting operation, it switches over, unfortunately, to a birch and poplar forest. And so you can imagine what kind of impacts that would have on the wildlife that would be living in the coniferous forest when, after a clear-cut operation comes in. That's pretty devastating as it is, but even more devastating when the species that grow back are not the same ones.
And where does this wood go?
The majority of the products that are coming out of the boreal forest end up being shipped actually to the United States for markets down there. The boreal forest, the trees are turned into two primary products. One is lumber that goes into building houses and tables and chairs and what have you. And a great portion of the forest also goes into the pulp and paper industry. And so toilet paper, facial tissue, paper towels, the copy paper that we use, the newspapers that we read, magazines and catalogs, all these products are made from ancient boreal forest trees.
And we waste it by the ton and toss it in a landfill when we're done, basically. I know that Greenpeace was involved in a couple of actions. There was one down in Everett in November. There was a big bus set up like a rolling Kleenex box, and yet another one in November in Turin, Italy. So this is an international campaign, is it?
It very much is an international campaign, and the reason for it being an international campaign is because this forest is so ecologically important. It's so vast that it's a forest that's of global importance, and that's why we're seeing actions like the one that happened in Everett, Washington, where we blockaded the facility of Kimberly-Clark. And Kimberly-Clark is the world's largest manufacturer of tissue products, and unfortunately they get about a quarter of the pulp that they use in their operations from the boreal forest, from very destructive logging operations. We've been urging the company for a very long time now to clean up its act, to stop destroying these forests, and to seek alternative and more sustainable solutions like using more recycled pulp in their tissue products and using pulp from operations that are sustainably sound. So we set up a blockade using a giant bus at their Everett, Washington mill just across the border, and we got quite a bit of media attention around that and really disrupted their operations for a day to highlight the type of destruction that is continuing because of this company. The action that we saw in Italy not too long ago as well was a blockade of Kimberly-Clark's sales office in Turin, Italy. And again, that type of action happened because there is this growing concern about the future of the boreal forest, and people just don't want to see the boreal forest turned into toilet paper and facial tissue that you use once and then you throw away or flush down the toilet. So we're really urging companies like Kimberly-Clark to look at their operations, to look at the impacts that they're having on this forest, and to try to do better in the future.
So we're really talking about the people who make Kleenex, for one thing, isn't it?
It is, yes, definitely. Kimberly-Clark is the manufacturer of Kleenex brand tissue products. They're probably one of the have some of the best known brands in the world that they control. And unfortunately, like I said, these products are manufactured from clear-cut ancient forests. And you know, I think if you ask the average Canadian, do they want to see their toilet paper, the toilet paper that they use every day, and the facial tissue that they blow their noses in, especially during this flu season that's coming up? Do they want to see these products come from a forest that's been around for 10,000 years, that's the habitat of endangered species like woodland caribou and wolverines? And obviously they're going to say no. They want to see something, they want to see products made in the most ecologically sustainable way. And unfortunately companies like Kimberly-Clark are not doing that.
Well, I noticed on the Greenpeace website that you're selling a set of three hankies for $10 that we could use that in the flu season and wash them. I mean, we wear a pair of socks, we don't throw them away, we wash them in the washing machine. We could do the same thing for our tissue needs, really.
Absolutely, and I think that's where the average consumer, the average Canadian, can really play a role in this work to protect the boreal forest. We use paper products every single day, and at Greenpeace, we're urging Canadians and North Americans to try to reduce their consumption and to try to reduce the demand on these forests. And so choosing more sustainable products, more environmentally friendly products like washable hankies is a good first step. When they go to the grocery store, we're urging people to look out for brands of tissue products like toilet paper and paper towels that that are 100% recycled. And we've put together a handy shopper's guide to ancient forest-friendly tissue products that can be downloaded from the Greenpeace website at greenpeace.ca that gives you a list of the products that are green and environmentally friendly, and a list of the companies and products that fall into the red category, the avoid category. Those are the companies that are not doing the best to reduce their impact on the boreal forest, and we're asking people to avoid those types of products.
And on the big scale, how do you see climate change affecting this boreal forest?
Well, it's interesting when it comes to the climate change issue. The boreal forest, because of its size and because it's largely still intact, though under some serious threat from logging operations and oil and gas operations, it holds massive amounts of carbon within its trees, but also especially within its soils. And these are soils that have largely not been disturbed for over 10,000 years. And so when we look at the boreal forest, we see it as a giant carbon bank. And unfortunately, when you have destructive logging operations that move in, that disturbs the soils, and then you're obviously removing the trees from the landscape, and that releases massive amounts of carbon into the atmosphere. So there's an opportunity here in our fight to stop global warming, to combat climate change, which is obviously quite a hot issue right now, no pun intended, to look at the boreal forest as a means to combat global warming. And that's by protecting the boreal forest and protecting large chunks of the boreal forest so that carbon isn't released into the atmosphere. On the other hand, as well, the boreal forest is one of the first ecosystems on the planet that's being impacted by global climate change. We're seeing an increased number of fires in the boreal forest because of the drying out of soils due to a rise in temperatures. We're also seeing the start of insect outbreaks that we believe are linked to global climate change. And so we're in a very delicate and sensitive time right now, where the boreal forest represents this great opportunity to fight global climate change, but it's also one of the first ecosystems that's being impacted by global warming. So we need to really step up and to do as much as we can to protect this very important forest.
And finally, how do you see your campaign developing now as Greenpeace?
We're continuing to put pressure on Kimberly-Clark and looking at other companies, including logging companies, that are not doing their best to reduce their impact on these forests, who are continuing to clear-cut these forests. I think what we've seen recently with some of the number of actions in Europe around the issue of boreal forest destruction, I think that's going to continue. I think people in Europe care very much about what happens in North America. They especially care because many of the products that they're using in their everyday lives comes from Canada. I said earlier that the United States is the largest market for boreal forest products, but Europe plays a role as well. This is an area that, you know, a place in the world that uses lots of pulp, lots of paper, and lumber for manufacturing purposes. And so we're looking increasingly at Europe to put pressure on these Canadian logging companies to stop destroying the boreal forest.
Well, we've been speaking with Richard Brooks of Greenpeace. And what is the web address again for those who want to get updated on this campaign?
For more information about our work to protect the boreal forest, they can visitors can check out greenpeace.ca. And if they're particularly concerned about the issue of Kimberly-Clark and the destruction of boreal forests for tissue products, we have a handy campaign website that's stopkleenex.com.
Stopkleenex.com. I like it. Well, thanks very much for talking with Radio EcoShock today.
Thanks, Alex.
You're listening to Radio EcoShock every Friday at 1 o'clock on CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver.
No one is meant to be living here in a concrete sea. Everyone, including me, wishes he could be set free.
Hi, Terry Jacks, and you're listening to Radio EcoShock.
Then I looked into the ocean blue, 'cause it's so deep and it's so quiet too. There's just too many people everywhere.
Well, we're talking with singer-songwriter Terry Jacks, who's practically a fixture on the oldies stations for all of his hits, including Seasons in the Sun and others. But I remember visiting your house quite a while back and finding a lot of gold records you wrote for other artists. Listeners might not realize what a prolific songwriter you were, as well as a performing artist yourself.
Well, most of the songs I wrote, well, I wrote all the Poppy Family songs, and then a few of my songs, and the people I've worked with, Anonymous Scurry and the Beach Boys, and I produced and arranged Chilliwack's first big hit, Crazy Talk. That was actually on my label, Goldfish Records.
Well, that seemed to be a golden age of record making, and I think that's why they keep being replayed. I came to you today partly because of a song that I heard on station Concrete Sea. And it was one of the earliest Green hits that I can think of. It was really the beginning of something, I thought.
Concrete Sea, that was, yeah, one of my first environmental songs I wrote, I guess. I wrote that, I was coming in, I lived in Horseshoe Bay at the time, I was coming into Vancouver and I wasn't really looking forward to it. And I heard a song in the radio that I just said, this guy doesn't even know what he's talking about. And that's the way the song started off, you know. I heard some music being played today, I heard a song, but the words were wrong. What else did, when it said, it doesn't really matter anyway, some people don't know, really care what they say or something, I don't know. It was something like that. I was in a bad mood, and I was upset about Woodfibre at the time because they were way over their permit as far as what they were doing them, pumping into our air and water, and it was just one of those times. That was way back in about 1970, I guess.
So that was a pulp and paper company, and you became something of an activist at the time about that, didn't you?
Well, that's when things started bothering me. I just didn't understand how these pulp mills, you know, like in Howe Sound, Port Mellon and Woodfibre, how they could be destroying our water and our air, and like, which is supposed to be, you know, everybody's supposed to own our water and air. It's not just for, you know, shareholders and heads of companies. You know, I understand there has to be jobs and we have to use paper and wood, but they weren't doing very much to actually, avoid pollution, and it got to me. In later years, as you know, I got really involved. I spent about 15 years, you know, wondering why the government was allowing these people to not follow their permits. Whereas, you know, I always said that when I drive my car, you know, the government would always tell me they're doing their best, but these were laws. And I came back with, well, when I drive my car and speed, I can't tell the cop I'm doing my best. I get fined. And you people don't seem to enforce any of our environmental laws, and that still sort of goes on today. Government seems to be in bed with these guys, and it's too bad, you know, what's happening.
Well, it's happening in many places of the world, these pulp and paper mills, and they say they've improved somewhat, and I think they have added some technology, but then what they do is they double or triple their production, so they're putting out the same amount of junk into the water and the air. It's terrible if you live around one of those things.
No, you're completely right. And what's worse is, you know, at one time I took the Minister of Environment in British Columbia to court, and I also took the pulp mill at Port Mellon. And the reason being was because, you know, they cleaned up their water, as you say, a lot. A lot of the dioxins and furans have been cut down, but our previous government had promised to rid the mill's use of chlorine compounds, and it was going to happen, as you know, in 2001, 2002, but as soon as this government came in, they just changed the whole thing around and set the whole process back years and years. And the worst thing is, Alex, is that, you know, like now, instead of pumping this crap into the water, they're burning it. So we're getting these dioxins and furans and CO2 and SO2 and all this junk in the air, and it's not even being monitored. You know, it's randomly monitored maybe once a year, but, like, it's unbelievable. So now it's got these dioxins and furans, they go up into the air, and these are the most, you know, toxic compounds made by man. They're actual, as you know, cancer-forming.
Yeah, and they're in everybody. They're in my blood, Terry, and they're in yours, and they're even in the blood of whales up in the Arctic.
You are so right. And now it goes into the air, and it rains down on us and goes back into the water anyway. And the only way to rid a lot of these is, you know, that the pulp mills, that one dioxin, what is it, 2378-TCDD, it's... once it gets into your body, it just never leaves. And one trillionth of an animal's body will cause a cancer. And the cancer rates are certainly not going down. And yet these guys are still continuing using these chlorine compounds. And anyway, I get riled about this stuff, and I know you do too. So did you want to talk about music or what?
Well, a little bit of mixture of both. I'm also interested, you were telling me earlier that you're kind of disconnecting from things. You're not on the net right now. I know you've generally tried to live by the sea, and you're back there, aren't you?
Right. I've lived on the sea since I've been 19 years old. Now I keep going further north. I live up the Sunshine Coast now, and I've got property up on Haida Gwaii. I've had it for a long time up in the park up there, Nikoon Park, and that's my ultimate paradise. I just love that place. I've been up there so many times, 20 times. So I started out in Vancouver, then West Vancouver, then Horseshoe Bay, then Sunshine Coast, next stop, Haida Gwaii, you know, and that's where I want to live my final years up there, Alex.
Well, you're moving away from the crowd and the concrete sea.
That's right. As I was saying, I'm just trying to simplify my life, and I've eliminated cell phones and even internet. Those kind of things can drive you crazy, and I'm obsessive compulsive, and it would drive me crazy.
Well, I'm still connected, and it is driving me crazy, and I have to do what you do. I tend to go out camping and get away for a couple of months of every year, and I'm totally disconnected. I don't talk to anybody or read any of the news, and then I come down a little bit, and I'm ready to fight the dragon again.
Yeah, that news really gets you. You get addicted to it. It's really... I've been doing a project, though. Get back to music. If you want to talk music a little bit, I haven't been producing and arranging and writing for, you know, a few years. And I started working with this girl 3.5 years ago. She writes, she plays guitar, and sings, and she's really good. I'm just going back to get her a deal back east next week. Her name's Jana Keeley, and she's really good. And that's been really exciting. I really miss doing my music because that's what I like doing the best.
Has she got a website where we can follow her?
Actually, she does. She's sort of putting one up herself. So you could look up, it's Jana, J-A-N-A, Keeley, K-E-E-L-E-Y, .com. I think she's just starting to put something up herself. But, I've just finished this album. And so I'm going back, and I don't know when it's going to be out. You know, by the time you get a deal and they do promotion and stuff and everything, you know, it'll probably be, 5 months or something. It takes a while to do this kind of stuff, but it really turned out well.
There are a couple issues I wanted to ask you about. Something I've been puzzling about. I just did a feature on a guy named Derek Jensen, and he's down in the States, and he's saying, well, you know, the previous generation has really screwed it up, that the climate's going out of control, the whole civilization is out of control. And so, really, the only way to save nature is to take down civilization, and there's a little bit of a hint that if violence is necessary for the revolution, well, that's great. And I'm just this old-time pacifist. I can't get it out of my system, you know, sort of a Gandhi kind of guy. And I'm wondering how that earlier generation of the 70s, which also thought that the suits were out of control and warlike and we needed a revolution to solve it. We never got that revolution, but we changed some things. And are we going to see a new wave of young people picking up that kind of 70s feeling, do you think?
Well, one of the big troubles I find, what's going on now, is like our governments are becoming so ripe, especially here like in B.C., and they've, you know, the environment again is on the back burner. Everything's push economy. Let's drill for oil in the waters. Let's, you know, rip down all these trees. And, you know, it's not really anything to do with jobs because they're using more automation all the time. It's to do with greed. It's, you know, well, if you check the statistics, the rich are getting richer here and the poor are getting poorer. And it's harder. The public really cares about our air and our water and all this stuff. It's really, you know, the environment, they really care about it. But the government and the big industry heads, you know, the CEOs and all that, they're all working together. And they are the shareholders and they're the directors of, you know, our newspapers and our television stations and everything. And they're controlling everything. And they're keeping the environment out of the news. And yet the people would love to really be involved and hear in this and hear about it and do something. But they can't because, you know, as I say, you know, you can't get through. Like, you know, for years we didn't have with this Campbell government, he dissolved the Ministry of Environment. We didn't even have an environment minister.
That was incredible, wasn't it? Well, we've solved the environmental problem. We've just closed the environment ministry. There you go.
Yeah, that's really right. And you look at Georgia Strait now, what's happened, you know, like all the fish have gone, and it's awful, you know. Jacques Cousteau said that this was going to happen primarily because of the pulp mills, what they were doing, and it did happen. And it's, I don't know. I mean, we need a revolution, but it's hard sort of, how do you unite all these people? Because, as I say, papers, media, all media and government are all sort of like controlled by the same people now, you know?
Well, sadly, that was the same situation in Nazi Germany. I mean, Hitler had control of the newspapers totally. The new medium of television started out. The first big speech was by Adolf Hitler. So we have seen situations before where the media repress things, but it just seems incredible to me now, as the whole scientific world warns that we're heading for a disaster, really. Even the most conservative scientists are agreeing with us now, and yet the Bush government in particular, and now Mr. Harper in Canada, are backing away from Kyoto. They're saying, oh, we don't need controls, and I think it probably has to get worse before it gets better.
Well, the Bush government and governments here in B.C., like who, or no, B.C., well, I guess B.C., and Canada, and federal government, look who is running them, really. Industry is running them, you know. There's only a few companies in the world that are running the world right now. It is getting pretty scary, I tell you, Alex, real scary.
It is, and we're also seeing in the United States what they call the Green Scare, where people are being arrested, and some of their actions, if they did them, I would disagree with, for example, arson. But I think the real point in that is that they're going well beyond those couple of dozen people and questioning environmentalists going way back, building up big databases and using all their money they got for terrorism after 9/11 to fight environmentalism at the very time that we need it most.
Yeah. It's you know, that's why I'm doing this musical project right now, because, you know, it's, you know, your hands get so tied. I just don't know what to do as far as the environment goes anymore. You know, it's being all sewed up by, as I say, industry and government, and they're all just working together. But the people, I think, you know, want something different, but they're being controlled now completely.
Well, but we're also going along with it, and I include myself in that, you know. I know what's going on, and yet I still get in my car and drive around, and sometimes just to see what's going on. I know I'm wasting energy. It's hard as one person to make the changes. We try in our own small ways, but I think we're going to have some sort of wave of public anger, perhaps, and dismay and determination to save the world, literally.
Well, government loves to point fingers at the little guy, you know, like saying, you know, the fishermen are taking all the fish. Well, that's not the story, you know. The fish, are their habitat's been destroyed, you know. As you know, like, they leave little beauty spots along the main rivers, but all the little creeks and stuff that run into them, all the arteries, it's like, and if you block all the little arteries that go to your heart, you know, the mainstream one is going to die too.
Mm-hmm.
And we're killing our rivers by just, and the habitat of our fish. And, you know, they love to say, you know, the main problem is the government. They are not putting things in place so that they are not running. They're looking after themselves and the big companies, and we're suffering. It's just I don't know, but I do know what I'm talking. I'm just getting upset. I just haven't talked like this for quite a while. As I say, I'm doing some music right now just to give myself a rest.
Well, music saves a lot of us. I can think of many a time when I'm disturbed about things. I put some music on, and somehow it can bring you to a feeling of not only your inner self, but that we could have a better world.
No, we certainly could, without a doubt.
So
I don't know the answer.
Well, for some of us who've been fighting for a lot of years, I think part of the answer is now to enjoy as much of nature and the time that we have as we can.
We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun, but the hills that we climbed were just seasons out of time.
Where do you see, you were talking about Haida Gwaii, how would you like to live up there? How do you picture Terry Jacks as the years come on?
Well, I love to travel. I still do television, quite a bit of television in Europe, by the way, in Germany and Norway and England. And when I go over there, because, like, Seasons in the Sun, it's still the, you're probably aware, it's still the biggest selling single by a Canadian artist.
I did not know that.
Worldwide. It sold 13 million records just as a, a single, not an album. I think Celine Dion has the biggest selling album. But it gives me an opportunity that when I travel, I can get in to see these environment ministers in these different countries, because they're all about my age now, and they all remember the song. And I get in there, and I do my part. And, like, it was really interesting. When I talked to the Minister of Environment in Norway, I was in there, you know, talking to him about, you know, they're still, you know, killing whales.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out leaving kind of, I left there almost feeling foolish, because, first of all, he said that, look, we know exactly, they only eat one whale. They actually eat whales there. They've been eating whales for hundreds of years. But they only eat the minke whale. And the minke whale, you know, they know exactly how many are going up and down the coast in Norway, and they only say, take a certain amount. And there's more going up there now, he told me, than there were 50 years ago. And they only take a few, and the people have been eating them for years and years and years. And they have complete control of what they're doing. They don't take any of the larger whales. And my only comeback was, well, whales are a mammal, and they're smart, and we can learn from them in the ocean. And he says, yeah, but, you know, like, look what you're doing over there. You're still cutting all your old growth down. We made those mistakes years ago, and you people are still using, you know, ancient pulp and paper production methods, which we learned years ago, you know, destroy our water. And your fish farms over there, you know, our fish farms, we made big mistakes years ago with the method which we were using for fish farms. And you people are doing all these things that we learned. You should have learned from us and not be doing them that way. And, like, I didn't have much of an answer. He said, we eat this whale meat. We can control it. We only use the one type of whale. And these whales are abundant all along the coast in Norway. And he said, we've come up with one problem, though, because the blubber, we don't know what to do with, because we will not sell it to the Russians or the Japanese or anybody for oils or for perfumes. because then that does not look good in the eyes of the world. So we have to find out some method to do with the blubber, because right now we're storing it and we're freezing it in huge warehouses, and we've got piles of this whale blubber. But so I don't, you know, you can't really blame them. They've got the number one standard of living in the world, Norway does, way ahead of us. They've got the, you know, as far as longevity in life, they are number one in the world. And we're making a lot of the mistakes that they made years ago, and we aren't learning from them. And, you know, I didn't have much comeback when I talked to him. You see what I'm saying?
I do. You know, my personal feeling is that you have to take it on a broader view, that, that when somebody's whaling, then somebody else says, well, we want to whale too. And those people may not be as disciplined or as aware as the Norwegians are. Now, you know, there is some Aboriginal whaling has been going on up in the north of Canada, for example, for bow whales, and those people have been surviving on that meat for, well, we don't know how long, a long, long time. But when it comes to, for example, the Japanese who are just turning their whales into pet food, and various other countries who just go out and grab one, they don't care what it is, even if it's endangered. So it's a tough one, I agree with you. But when you come to saying that Canada is just not really any green icon, we're very wasteful people as Canadians and North Americans generally, and I wish we had a better way of learning what's going on in Europe, but again, as you say, our media really don't tell us this. There's just so much happening in Europe in green action that we never hear about here in Canada.
Oh, that's for sure. I mean, they've made the mistakes years ago, and we don't learn from them. But, you know, I'm not promoting killing whales by any means at all, but I'm just saying, you know, like when you get into what Russia and Japan do, and they're killing all, you know, all of whales, you know, whether they're blue finbacks, all that. But, you know, it's there is no shortage in the world of the actually minke whale, which they're not endangered by any means in Norway. But that's never explained by the media to the world. Norway's thrown in with everybody else.
Do you think some of the Europeans think that North Americans and Americans, I suppose, in particular, are kind of crazy in a way? I mean, they have, you know, all the lakes in Germany, there was a point where you couldn't swim in any of them. They were just toxic with industrial pollution and acid rain. And they've made somewhat of a comeback, and they're building a lot of wind power. Look at wind power in Denmark. There's just so much going on over there. And they must look over here in just despair. I mean, we're the biggest polluters, not only per capita, but just, I think about 25% of the world's global warming gases come out of us here in North America.
No, you're completely right. We're considered still a frontier because, you know, we're a lot newer place than Europe. And we're still being, you know, our land and our water and everything is still being raped. Eventually it'll be, you know, like what has happened to Europe, what has happened to Germany and Norway. And no, we just... As they say, it's greed. The bottom line is greed. It's always greed. That's all it is. It's got nothing to do with the workforce, because the workforce is continually, you know, chopped apart by automation and, you know, like one person taking two people's jobs and downgrading it. Anyway.
Or we just ship.
I don't want to get upset today. I'm just, as I say, I was just.
So, how does Terry Jacks find peace, knowing what you know?
Without a doubt, it's through nature, and it's through, I'm a Christian. I've gained a tremendous amount of strength from being a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, I mainly was interested in being a steward and trying my best to protect what God has given us in this planet, not destroying it. So that's where I gained my peace from, and I'm a project person. I do one thing at a time. So I was telling you, I'm just over. I had prostate cancer, but that was completely fixed up, and everything. It's amazing, you know, like what they can do now if you catch these things early enough. And I'm completely well, and everything works, and I got it early, and so I'm just right now just recuperating from that major surgery, and I don't know. I'm getting happier every day.
Well, that's the way we've got to do it. And I think that there's a way that happiness has to be part of environmentalism. I mean, if we're trying to save nature, we have to really enjoy it. I mean, there are days when I walk out and the sun is bright and the air feels good, and I'm just happy to be alive.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. Well, Terry, I really appreciate your taking the time to talk with us today. We've been speaking with Terry Jacks, the famous singer and songwriter and environmental activist living up on the Sunshine Coast of British Columbia. So thanks again, Terry.
All right, Alex. Thank you.
All right. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Radio EcoShock, all environment radio, all the time. Tune in for free at www.ecoshock.org. That's E-C-O, shock like an electric shock, .org. So here's one of the original green protest songs from the early 70s, Terry Jacks and Concrete Sea.
I heard some music being played today. I heard a song, but the words were wrong. It didn't matter to me anyway. Some people really don't care what they say. I started looking to the sky today, 'cause it's so big and it's so far away. I've got too many things inside my head. I wish that I could be up there instead. No one is meant to be living here. And it's so quiet too. There's just too many people everywhere. I wish that I was down there. No one is meant to be living here in a concrete sea. Everyone, including me, wishes he could be set free. I heard a story today about a man and just how he got away. You gotta leave the things you grow up for. Turn your head and start to swim for shore. No one is meant to be living here in a concrete sea. Everyone, including me, wishes he.
That's it for Radio EcoShock on CFRO Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. I wish you the best, and I hope to see you back next Friday and every Friday for Radio EcoShock, the full-time all-environment radio station. Don't forget to check out our website at www.ecoshock.org. Recorded way back in 1984 by the Chevrons from London, UK. Keep your feet firmly on ground.